Lesson 5, question 5. That works out good. And when we finish these questions here, I'll ask you if you've got any favorite proverbs in chapters 10, 11, and 12. Number 5, how is a neighbor destroyed and who does it? And 11:9. Yes, you can hurt and destroy a neighbor, affects another person with your mouth. It says godless man and that sort of thing. And you use what words to describe his actions?
Destroys.
Yeah, with
his mouth.
The hypocrite. Yeah.
Hypocrite with his mouth destroys.
Okay. All right. And what do you destroy of a neighbor when you? You hypocrite towards him, or you slander him, or whatever. What are you destroying?
Reputation.
Right. His influence on others, isn't it? Okay. 6. What is the difference between the merciful or kind and the cruel?
Good.
Does himself good.
Yeah. And the cruel man does himself harm.
That's right.
And also at 18, it says that he gets a true reward, and then in verse 19, the poor man brings about his own death.
Yeah. So himself good, himself harm, his own death. Okay? So that's a very personal thing there, isn't it? Okay? And opposed to a neighbor. Number 7, what is compared to a beautiful woman who lacks discretion?
Ring of gold in her.
Swine snout. Gold ring and the swine snout. Yeah.
So, or I guess any ring, huh? but what's the point of the ring? This gold ring and the swine snout.
So inappropriate.
Inappropriate, out of place, not right, not the intended purpose. I guess you'd say. All right. What's discretion? In other words.
Caution when you speak.
Caution when you speak. All right. This idea of
good
judgment.
Yeah,
all
how you present
judgment.
Yourself.
That's right. Okay. Not loud, boisterous.
What you say, how you say it, how you dress. Mm-hmm. All
which is good. Things. Good lesson for every man and woman, isn't it? Okay. I had to figure. It just crossed my mind. Why is that particular to a woman? I'm just in this verse. It says woman. That's all. Okay.
When it comes down to it, it's beauty is as beauty does. You know, the old proverb.
You write that one down. That's in Proverbs 32, right? Right. Right. Yep.
Another word in New King James says taste.
Yep.
It means taste.
Yep, means taste. Okay. So in a sense, the woman is a civilizing part of the race?
Supposedly.
Okay. Okay, number 8. A wife who shames or disgraces is what to her husband?
Rottenness in his bones.
Is that the way he perceives it? Others perceive it? Both ways, isn't it? Okay. And it's a complete dishonor, isn't it? Rottenness to his bones. We use the word cancer, a lot of things. Okay.
Sometimes they say rotten to the core.
Yeah, that's right. This is, no,
you can be disgraced and feel disgraced, mm-hmm. or the verses, the opposite of that is a good wife is a crown to him.
Mm-hmm. And honors him. Okay. And in effect, you honor him, you honor yourself too, don't you? And you honor God if you're representing. The honor and dishonor. Number 9. What is said of one who tills the land? 12:11. Okay. Satisfied, he has plenty of bread, he prospers. He finishes his task assigned to him. Okay? And at the end of that finishing your task is bread or reward. All right? Finish what you started. And number 10, what makes the heart of man weigh down or be glad? This is a good one here. This is my pick for chapter 12. Anxiety in the heart. Sorry, excuse me. 12:25. Go ahead.
Anxiety in the heart.
Okay. And the other one is what?
A good word.
Okay.
For encouragement.
Right. I picked the words discouragement and encouragement. All right. And that's good in life. Personal relationships is good in business. It's good everywhere to help people. But it's supposed to be, should be honest, shouldn't it? And fair. Encouragement and discouragement. When you discourage someone, is it teaching? Can you honestly, truly discourage someone?
Truth, yes.
Yes. What's an instance?
What's what?
What's a happening? What's a realism to that? What is it discouraging to someone? What action would they be doing? How, if you say yes, it can be in a good way. Can discouragement be good?
Yeah, we're doing this wrong.
That's yes. Right. In the manner of teaching, isn't it? Okay, in the manner of teaching, for correction. All right? Discourage someone doing something. Okay?
Yeah, but not to make them discouraged.
That's right. Lose heart.
There's a fine line there. Mm-hmm. It can't do too much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can really be discouraged.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
That's what Paul deals with in 2 Corinthians. What? About the man who had disciplined in the Corinthian church.
Yes, First Corinthians 5.
But he had repented and said, you know, show your love to him and reaffirm your love to him so that he won't be able to come.
And that's encouragement. Encouragement. Can you do more with a stick or a carrot?
Sometimes it takes both.
Interesting. It depends on the situation. Wisdom in it.
That's right.
Knowing the situation.
Jesus did.
Yeah. Knowing the past. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I picked a couple of verses just to think about in 10, 11, or 12. First of all, do y'all have any that was particular interest to you in 10 or 11 or 12?
10:22.
All right. Let's see.
The blessing of the Lord makes one rich, and he adds no sorrow with it.
Okay. All right. And what's your thought on that?
Well, it kind of says the whole thing right there. You know.
Okay.
Well, you know, that's interesting because in other places it says that those that are rich have sorrow. But the richness that comes from God doesn't bring sorrow with it. It's a different kind of riches.
That's right.
Not always physical.
Yep, that's right. That's right. The blessings from the Lord bring contentment, don't they? They bring purpose. And is that if you've got contentment and purpose in life, that certainly God didn't add that, did he? Excuse me, the sorrow part of it. All right, you added it. Right. The Lord has no sorrow to it.
Right. It sort of goes up there to verse 11 with the mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. Which, you know, what she was talking about there, you know, the mouth of the righteous is going to be, you know, a blessing from the Lord because they're going to speak what is right, the wisdom of the Lord. And it's going to be a blessing. Whereas, you know, the sorrow, if there won't be no sorrow from that. The word of the Lord is pure. It doesn't make for sorrow. It restores.
Sure. Good one. All right, any others, anyone? 10, 11, 12, that particular interest?
12, 15.
All right, 12, 15.
Just because it's a particular problem that I have, not because it's anything that we haven't heard a thousand times.
You're talking, he was a guarantor for a stranger who surely suffered?
No.
For it?
The
way 10%.
Right. 12:15.
I'm sorry. All right. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. Goes back to selfishness, self-interest. All those things are the way of the fool, but a wise man heeds counsel. All right? Counsel, hopefully, from wise. How do you choose which counsel?
Well,
just listen to everybody and just pick the one you feels good? Or
I think you have to choose the one that fits the teachings in the Scriptures. most closely.
Yeah, and you can see by that, this counsel, we're talking to a person, it's a person, let's say in this case, it's a person. How do you choose which person to take counsel from? See what they're based in, don't you?
The counsel in Proverbs, don't you think, is always talking about knowledge from wisdom from God.
Maybe. Melissa says counselors. Okay? It's always wisdom, yes. In one way or another, wisdom can be through a person. Can it? Yeah, sure, that's the whole point. And when you pass it from generation to generation?
Yes, but you're speaking. Mm-hmm. It's like, listen to your father's teaching, your mother's teaching, and your father's counsel. You're not talking about, I don't think they're talking about just what they've come up with because they've lived a long time.
Yes, oh yes,
they're
correct.
They're an adult.
Oh yes,
it's
yes.
It's because they're speaking God's word. That's what I'm talking about.
So when you choose a counselor, you base by what they base their life on, or counsel from the wise words themselves. Well, what does that mean? What does that proverb mean? Or what does this group of scriptures mean? Well, you dig into it yourself. All right? But also those wise teachers too. Okay? Sick parents. All right. Anything else?
I chose 11:4.
Okay, 11:4.
Kind of also fell in with Friday night's lesson.
Let me read that. Riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. You can't take it with you. Is there value in money? Yes. It falls into the money one, which we had from Charles, okay, on Friday night. That was a good request, too, that particular CD for that. Charles talked about money and the way it affects our priorities, the way it affects how we view God sometimes. Okay, Charles talked about all that, and he talked about the American viewpoint. Is it just American, the way you view money? No, it's worldwide, isn't it? Okay, I know he used American a lot. I talked to him afterwards about that. Okay?
Well, I think American, specifically because of our affluence, and because we have so much.
Well,
that's why
available.
People come over here, to get the American dream.
Yes.
The riches, the wealth, the fame, you know, that's why a lot of people migrate to America.
And another of all the reasons why people hate us so much, Europe and...
Riches do not profit in the day of wrath. Okay? Righteous delivers from death.
Can't buy your way out of hell.
Yeah, that's right. When you're dead, that's it.
Ask the rich man.
Yes. Okay. And when there's... okay. Any other thoughts on that? Okay? Any other verses? Anyone?
12:28.
All right. In the way of righteousness is life, and in its pathway there is no death. Excellent general prediction of when you choose what is right. And you have a good life, prayerfully many years, lived in health and security, and no death. And we talked about last time that in its pathway there is no death when you live in that righteous way. And that death there, what do you think, Lisa? Is that death here in this life, or is it a death, or just a separation eternally? In the way of righteousness is life, living right here. In its pathway there is no death. I think that's just a general thing. Could apply in this life too. And in fact, you're living in a insecurity. You're living. You're watching what you do. You're watching your associations. You're not living with rough people, like we've seen before. The violence always on their mind. And running with those people. Then you do. You may not have death in you, as a predictable thing in your life. You know, if you're a member of a street gang in some inner cities, you know, death may be in your future. Okay, so you watch what you do. It's pathway, there's no death. And it could have a separation from God aspect to it too, that in the end, if you live a way of righteousness, you won't have that separation from God in the end. Anyone else?
12:18.
All right. There is one who speaks rashly like the thrusts of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. What do you think about that, Alana?
Too often somebody says, oh, I was just kidding. Or remarks are made sort of in jest, but really deep down, they're meant to sting, to hurt.
You can thrust a sword at a smiling face, can't you? Sometimes it wears on you, doesn't it? Okay. How do you tell someone cautiously? They got the sword, huh?
It's funny. You have to be close to someone to use a sword.
Yeah, it is interesting. You have to know about them, don't you? Yeah.
It's not like a gun that you can shoot far away. You have to be kind of close.
That's right.
You know, jokes as well. I've heard that, like, for a joke to be funny, it has to be somewhat true.
Oh, yeah, the funniest ones always are, one way or another. Okay, got some element of reality in them or truth in them. Okay.
I like 12:7.
All right. The wicked are overthrown and are no more, but the house of the righteous will stand. What does that build for you?
Just
when
that
a house stands.
Judgment is there, yeah. And if you're on the right side of judgment, you don't have to worry.
You know that there's going to be an outcome and that the wicked are going to be overthrown. And if you live right, you'll stand and endure through it. Okay? That's a great confidence builder, isn't it? Great trust builder. Okay. It also says something about our convictions, doesn't it? Where are we? Are we wishy-washy in our convictions? What is truth and what isn't? That sort of thing. Are we living right or not? Okay.
Always trying to stand right.
That's right. That's right.
Because the Lord's watching. He is the one with whom we have to do. And He will vindicate. So many of the songs that David wrote, when he's surrounded by evil people and everything is, you know, number one, he asks God to take care of them instead of taking personal vengeance. And number two, you know, even if that didn't happen, he knew that God eventually would, you know,
yes,
get him. And then he prays that he stands, like she was saying, righteous, you know, just make me righteous, Lord, you know, help me to be righteous because you're going to deal with those people.
And he can deal with them much better than I can.
Right.
You know, you can have people who have swindled you or something like that. You know, they went to Bahamas and they're gone, okay? And you really wish you could get your hands around their neck sometimes, yeah. All right? But you can lean back and say, no, God's going to take care of that. But our prayer also is God's going to take care of it. Also, in a deeper sense, we also want them to repent someday too, don't we? Okay, hopefully, okay? And catch forgiveness. It's a little harder to wish that someone has done you wrong.
It's even harder if it's a family member.
Oh, yeah.
Within your own family.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. It really is.
That just makes me think of the song we sing with the kids, the wise men built his house on the rock. Mm-hmm. The foolish men,
yeah,
built his house,
mm-hmm,
on the sand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good lessons here. Good lessons. Okay.
I like 12:26. The righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray.
I wanted to bring that
26?
Up.
What did you say?
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up because the King 12, James 26? Is different than
what
we taught last week.
The righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray.
Mine's different from that.
I didn't have my copy in here. I was going to bring that up when class started
because
it's different than what they were.
Voice of experience that if you don't pick the right friends, it becomes very easy to go down the wrong path.
King James is a little bit different. The righteous is more excellent than his neighbor, but the way of the wicked seduceth them.
And then the New American Standard, the righteous is a guide to his neighbor. So,
yeah. It's like, mm-hmm, it's
kind of reversed.
It's reversed the direction of the advice.
Yeah. Is both advice good?
Yeah.
Okay. A neighbor's involved. And let's just say a general term is we influence others, don't we? Outside of us.
And they influence us.
And they influence us.
It goes both
ways. Okay. Right. Okay. What's the second part? The way of the wicked leads them astray?
For the way of the wicked leads them astray.
Because that pretty well held, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Goes back to chapter 1. when the parent is saying, don't go in the way of the evil man. Don't even hang out with him.
Your best chance in life is to choose people who think like you.
Not if you're wrong.
Have similar goals. I can understand. Yes, similar goals, but
your goals aren't.
That's right.
True.
Okay.
Similar goals.
That's right. Okay, I got you. Okay. So I put the wink in the eye on that one. All right.
Not supposed to do that.
That's right. No winking.
There's a proverb in here that was studied about not winking in the eye. Yeah. And it wasn't good. No.
Remember iRobot? The wink of the eye?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, you're in this part.
I'm moving. Move on.
I'm turning into Genozo here.
Yeah. Doug. That's, I know.
Move on.
Don't even try, James. Don't even try. I've tried, and I can't figure something out sometimes.
I'm there, though.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Good. That's real good. Okay. I had one more in 11:10. It kind of goes along with it, our associations. When it goes well with the righteous, the city rejoices. And when the wicked perish, there is joyful shouting.
Is that always the case? Not necessarily.
If there's great oppression, let's just say. Okay? It's not always the case, but again, we're talking Proverbs here.
I was going to say, because I've known some wicked, what you would consider wicked people, because they weren't living right, but they knew, they had been taught. So they knew, and there wasn't joyful shouting.
Because I'm talking city here. Kind of from a nationalistic point or a citywide situation, okay?
When Saddam
Hussein
failed,
I mean,
the people over there,
it was rejoicing.
The world rejoiced.
It was unreal, and they tearing down his statue.
Well, let's even go back to World War II, when France had been occupied by Nazi Germany, and the liberation involved there, okay?
The Berlin Wall going down.
Yeah.
I mean, just in our lifetime.
But
in my lifetime.
James is going, what's a Berlin Wall?
What's
World War
II? No. I think it would apply to these thugs that go out and kill people and then they're executed. I think people's glad to see that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Say you have city leaders that condone it. They give sanctuary or whatever it is to these sort of things. It's amazing. Okay.
Just like yesterday, that one Katero, the illegal immigrant, killed that policeman. Well, yesterday in Livingston, he broke out of prison. And five of them was breaking out, which they cornered them and shot three of them. And one of the jurors got up on TV and said, well, she thought he could be rehabilitated. So his sister was on TV last night. She said, you see how he was rehabilitated. So I think that...
In the Bible, when we read about Nineveh. And, Jonah went there to preach. And, it was very wicked. And they repented, And there was great rejoicing, everybody except for Jonah, of course.
And repentance came down, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And so, people rejoice. I mean, and in every case, it doesn't have to be a whole city, but when one person repents and obeys the gospel, there's great rejoicing.
Yes. Of course, even in Nineveh, in future, in the captivity, they went back to their old ways, all right?
But God took care of them.
That's right. Everybody goes in the leaders. I just want to throw that in from the ideal city point, the country point.
I think, because of the scripture and because of what this is talking about, I would think that it means more in the righteous community. You know what I'm saying? Not
if you
not trying to make it in our community or the world, because when it goes well with the righteous, the city rejoices. When you're in a righteous city, like a setting like a church or a group of people that all believe in God, when someone comes, when someone does something good in that community, everyone rejoices. Not out here in the world.
Right.
Because it doesn't really go that way.
Like, and also, if you got,
that's not really,
if you got a lot of good people in a community, is it easier to lead? Do you have a community leadership?
Yeah,
does the whole city?
More about like the
yeah, sure.
Christians.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we have effect on it. Our surroundings, those about us, on a larger scale. Watch our out here, our influence of others. Okay. All right. Let's see. Number 13, chapter 13. Continue basically the same sort of thing as comparing the upright and the wicked, the righteous and the unrighteous, the, you know, the fool and the wise man, that sort of thing. And it's going to start off with something we've seen before, the idea that this idea of parents and father and mother and that sort of thing, and the influence they have, and it'll move on down to tongue and honest and fair and trusted money and that sort of thing. So it's somewhat the same thing, but it's also some different viewpoints, too, as we go through it. So in chapter 13, number 1, a wise son accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. What viewpoint are we looking at here? A wise son accepts his father, and a scoffer does not listen. What's the viewpoint of that? From whose viewpoint? The one who's receiving the words, right? Okay, someone does not accept his father's discipline. A scoffer does not listen to rebuke. And
it's God's viewpoint of a wise son versus a fool.
Mm-hmm.
The wise son will listen to instruction. The fool will not.
And let's just look at the first one. A wise son accepts his father's discipline. Who gets the credit if things go right?
Parents. The son.
If the father didn't say the things he said, where would the son be? Wouldn't be wise. If the son didn't accept the thing that the father said, where would the son be?
So they both get credit.
They both somewhat do. No, they're both part of the equation, aren't they? All right?
Well,
but it starts with the father, doesn't it? It starts with the father.
God punished Eli for the activities of his sons, because he didn't do the things that he was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He didn't punish for what he did and not because of what his sons did.
Right.
Well, he got punished for what he didn't do.
Right.
So it's still on the Eli, the father.
Because he didn't rebuke, not because his
not
sons
because
what
they,
did
right.
what they did.
Right.
The sins of the father does not go to the sins of the son, not the sons to the father. Ezekiel 18.
But a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. And that's just a general statement. The scoffers, mockers, they just don't listen to any kind of correction. Okay? And the idea is they don't listen to their parent or their father. See, in that context. All right.
Even in our society, if children are evil or don't behave, people always think, why don't their parents do something? Why can't they do something with those kids?
Screaming in the aisle.
Well, I guess you could take the pass off to see all the bruises. It didn't work, did it?
but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Number 2. From the fruit of a man's mouth, he enjoys good. But the desire of the treacherous is violence. Okay? If there's a fruit of your mouth and you enjoy good, it must have said something good, right? There's a reward involved in it. And the things you say, the desire of the treacherous is violence. It harkens back a little to which we've seen throughout, even back to chapter 1. That can you achieve things for violence? Can treacherous people hunger for violence? What do they gain in violence? What does violence do?
Harm.
Harm. Does it, let's just say, does it intimidate?
I'm thinking. Violence can bring power.
Yes, that's right. Okay. You know, you think of the Capone days and things, just go back to there. You know, that idea of we're going to give you protection money. Well, protection from them, all right? And this violence and threat of violence, and that's the way they live, a treacherous life. And that's what they desired for their own power, which you said, okay? So we need to be on guard against them, but they just hunger for violence. Three, the one who guards his mouth preserves his life. The one who opens wide his lips come to ruin. The key there is open wide his lips. That's the context. If you guard your mouth, you're controlling your mouth. But the one who opens wide comes to ruin. Opens wide his lips. Is that a lot of talk? Is it talk that's rashly spoken? Like we said, the idea of
that's completely unbridled.
Yes. Okay.
No self-control.
Yeah. Out of control. And eventually that's going to bring sorrow and ruin, as in the idea of comparison of life and ruin here. All right? So one who is wise controls his mouth. Okay? Preserves. Thinks about what he's saying, as we've said before. All right? It's always the tongue in there. It's always the tongue. And four. The soul of the sluggard craves and gets... I'm just showing other versions on this too. The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, but the soul of the diligent is made fat. Is soul in all of the versions?
It is in that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. Okay. You don't see much of that. The soul, the heart, the innermost part of that, of a person, craves and gets nothing.
He craves it, but he doesn't do anything to obtain it. He expects it to be given to him.
And that's what the slugger tells us, that the word slugger there, and a lazy person. And they want more. They want more. And mainly what they want more is what others have. Mm-hmm. Okay? And in
well, or it could even be somebody that's like, I'm going to do good. I'm going to do better.
Yeah.
But then you never quite. From
they don't finish the task, do they?
Yeah. You don't really take the steps to get you where you need to be.
Yes.
That's laziness.
And if someone wants to get where they want to be, is that something they can do on their own? Yes. And if you need help, that's good too, isn't it?
Even more than
that. Okay. Yeah, if someone's been through it before, that helps too. Yeah.
Can you apply that to studying the Word? The soul of the sluggard isn't, you know, they might want to be as smart and knowledgeable as, let's say, the preacher. And, but it's the soul of the diligent who's being fast, the one who really works at studying the Word and applying it.
Yes. Diligent and slugger craves. Fat is the idea of you're richly supplied, you're satisfied, your desire has been fulfilled, that kind of thing.
It's more than just fulfilled. And it's more than just satisfied. That is the overabundance.
Richly supported. Okay.
I mean, it's more than what you need.
So one from their very soul is a diligent person. One from their very soul is a lazy sluggard. It has ramifications, okay, for them. And in the end, you know, even the lazy, you know, you may long to crave and long for things, but there's really nothing in the end. But there's something in the end for the diligent, okay? And that could be just a general thing. General action in life. All right. So we're always talking here about inner attitude, aren't we? Inner heart. Where do your actions spring from? Okay. Where are you really in life? With yourself. Where are you? Okay. Five. A righteous man hates falsehood, but a wicked man acts disgustingly and shamefully. Well. The clean on the first, and a righteous man hates falsehood. You want your righteous people that like lies and dishonest people? I don't think so. Okay? Hope not. But what about a wicked man acts disgustingly and shamefully? if one who's wicked shames people, if he offends a moral sense, if he's a disgusting individual, are those things you can see? Yeah. See, that's how they act. That's how they act. So a righteous man doesn't like lies and falsehood and dishonesty and dishonor and all those sort of things. If you can see a wicked man, he acts shamefully and disgustingly, whether he shames others or disgustingly, he's just a, I don't know, brute, I guess you'd say. All right? Six, righteousness guards the one whose way is blameless, but wickedness subverts the sinner. Interesting here. Righteousness and wickedness are kind of personified. So righteousness, what? Guards and protects the way of the blameless or innocent. Okay? But wickedness personified was what? Subverts the sinner, misleads the sinner.
This version says overthrows the sinner.
Okay, okay.
You have a wicked society that we live in. It subverts sin. It makes it calls bad good and good bad. Wickedness makes sin, like the devil, makes sin look good, and it subverts sin. At my version, it says literally sin, not the sinner, but literally sin, the sin of the sinner. And so wickedness. And if you surround yourself and your soul is in wickedness, then, you know, it. You don't look at sin as being sin, you know. It's good.
Sin itself, in an abstract way, it is what is what's there. You get involved in more and more righteousness, more and more wickedness. In effect, changes you, doesn't it? Keeps you down that path. All right? And in a sense, it guards and protects you too. All right, seven. There is one who pretends to be rich but has nothing. Another pretends to be poor but has great wealth. Whoa, what's going on here? Okay? Key word is pretends to be rich but has nothing.
Attitude.
Seen people like that? Okay?
We don't have to be in California tonight, so all around us.
And this could be just a pure straightaway deal that people just pretend to have a lot of money and really they don't have any, okay? You know? They just live it on credit, you know? Or look, look at car he's driving. Yeah, but he just made that first payment on it. You know, he don't own it, all right? Or, and another pretends to be poor but has great wealth. Now, some of the idea of this, if you had $100 million, would you pretend to be poor because you don't want people to kidnap your family? Would you want to pretend a little poorness to kind of stay out of the limelight for the idea of safety?
Too, I think it teaches humility. You know, it's more about your attitude. Because people, if you take money out of the equation, just somebody acting haughty because they're better than you or they think they're better than you, or they, you know, it doesn't always just have to be money, but it's more of an attitude of humility.
Of course, even in Proverbs, that's right, even in Proverbs, we'll take it to that. Even in Proverbs, there's instruction for those just with pure money, too, and how to deal with it, which you saw on Friday night. And if you pretend to be poor, but have great wealth.
Even if you have money, you don't want to be haughty.
Boasting.
That's right. There's trouble that comes with it. And I think it'd be a great wisdom and great counseling to help you with that. And you've seen people who won lotteries and things like that, in a few years it's gone. Great entertainers whose managers have taken all their money from them. Great boxers out there in boxing. Name is gone, okay? What would that do to your attitude towards other people? It would make you very cautious. That's a small word, okay? You tend to hate people. So, I'm kind of getting off the subject here.
But you know, there in, I don't know if the other versions have it. Literally, in verse 7, another pretends to be rich, it means to impoverish himself. Sort of agree with the humility versus the trusting in or the arrogance, you know, of pretense or wealth being the driving force, you know. A person, like you said, can be wealthy or have many goods in this life, but without humility, he's not rich towards God.
That's right.
Yeah, because the New King James says there is one who makes himself rich. So that...
Yeah, pretends to be rich.
Well, I mean, either that or he's made lots of riches. You know, he's obtained riches, yet has nothing. And one who makes himself poor, yet has great riches.
So we see in both of these approaches, the spiritual and just the pure physical dollar of it, both of them have truth in them, don't they?
Yeah, because you, like what Susan was saying... Finishing that thing, made himself rich, yet has nothing.
Yeah, that's right.
He has nothing spiritually.
Perhaps. Nothing spiritually.
Dead end road, isn't it?
Probably nothing to show for the great riches and wealth.
Life of ruin.
All
goes, yes. That's right.
When you get money, or if you make a lot of money, or you win a lot of money, or however you get this money, if you're not careful, money, as we all know, can corrupt you, because if you're not grounded, all of a sudden, anything you want is at your fingertips. So you can get anything you want, and then there's all this power that goes along with money. So you feel differently all of a sudden. It's like, hey, you know.
What's interesting, you mentioned power. If you have a lot of money, you want servants. If we serve someone, maybe how you spend it, I don't have a lot of money. People doing things for you. Is that a sense of power? Mm-hmm. It gives you a sense of power, doesn't it? Do this and it's done. Mm-hmm. All right? Interesting.
That's not a bad thing.
No.
Doesn't have to be.
But you have to be careful it doesn't change your mind that everybody serves me. Okay? And the money's the avenue to do that.
And you don't have to have a lot of money to want
servants.
I just want someone to pull my money. I don't have a lot of money.
Well, just somebody cut my grass.
Someone to iron and starch those shirts.
And even a rich man is to be a servant.
Yes, exactly right. So it's something we always got to watch for. And the special insights that need to be brought into play when you have money, okay? Even if it's a small windfall or a large one, okay?
You don't want to forget to serve to be rich.
Right, that's exactly right. Serve. Share and serve others, okay? A guy named Dave Ramsey, that's one he stresses a lot. Share with others. Okay, let's start there next time.